Did you know that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day? But don't take my word for it. Actually, you should take my word for it. And here's what you need to do. You need to go to ZipRecruiter.com/Zach. That's www.ZipRecruiter.com/Zach to learn more there about recruiting the best people for your business. The fastest, best people fast. You know that fast, good, cheap pyramid? Well, this is doing it all. This is fast, good, and yeah, you got to check out the pricing online. That's kind of above my pay grade, but ZipRecruiter, check it out. Too many ads. Here we go.
The Zach Kuhn Show.
Episode 67. I think this is episode 67. Kelly Bannon on the podcast. What can I tell you about Kelly? There's so much. There's so much I can tell you. She is the host of The Kelly Bannon Show and Today's Country, both on Apple Music, on the Apple Music radio stations. These are great shows. I mean, do they compare to The Zach Kuhn Show? No, of course not. What does? But I listen to these shows. I listen to these shows every week, and I'm going to tell you why. First of all, these shows really have great playlists, really great curation, and they're narrated kind of like a radio show. So you really get the behind the scenes of each song or many of these songs. And you really get a lot of insight when you listen to these shows, first of all. And second of all, there's a lot of really great exclusive content and interviews that you can only hear on these shows. There was a great interview with Alan Jackson, and Kelly did a great interview with Eric Church as well. And I mean, these are really good. And you know, we're going to talk a lot about them. So maybe if you've never checked out one of these shows, you will be convinced on episode 67 of The Zach Kuhn Show. But look, don't let me tell you what to do. Listen to the episode, gather the facts, and make a decision for yourself, because that's what America and country music is all about. Maybe, I don't know. You decide. Here we go. Episode 67, Kelly Bannon. Let's dive in. First of all, this is like, it's a lot of pressure to interview an interviewee, right? Like someone who does this all the time, a lot of pressure here to, you know, do a good job.
You feel pressure?
No, yeah, because you interview people all the time, and I do too, but there's always pressure when you interview someone who does a lot of interviewing, because I think they know what's on the other side, right? Do you know?
Oh, no.
No.
I'm a little lamb who's lost in the wood. I'm going wherever you're going. You have more experience interviewing people than I do.
And first of all, you're tricky to research because you have so much content out there. Like you have the show, you have the podcast, you have all these interviews that you've done. Like there's a lot to go through to kind of figure out like, who is Kelly Bannon? Like, what do I want to talk about? There's a lot we can talk about here, but I'm curious, like, how do you prep for interviews? Like, cause I think you do a great job with this. For example, your Alan Jackson interview that you did, you found this like show poster. What did you find from like one of his early showcases that you handed him? Like, how did you find this?
I'm about to get in like some serious trouble.
Wait, why?
Brooke, just don't pay attention. So sometimes for super high profile interviews, because I am new at interviewing.
Yeah, okay.
I will, of course, do my own prep, but I also will hire someone who is a much more experienced journalist me through. Like I go in with my list of songs that I know we need to talk about and what I think like the arc is. And then because here's the thing, and as an artist, and I don't want to be like as an artist, but like as an artist, I think I feel almost more burden to not be a shitty experience for that person and to honor their music. And often like Alan doesn't give a lot of interviews. Like it was hard to get that interview, but I'm sure it was hard. I wasn't the person negotiating this, but I'm sure it was hard to land that interview with Alan.
There's a pressure.
And so, yes, like one, I'm going to hurt my relationship with UMG. I'm going to hurt my Apple's relationship with UMG without like, so I feel a great burden to be as prepared as I can. I think step one is always the music. Like if you don't know the music really well, and I'm probably a little neurotic because I'm perfectionist and I also have like all the imposter syndrome stuff is just like screaming, but you know, minimum, like I've got to go all the way through the music multiple times. especially for an essentials. But yeah, in that case, I turned to a really, really respected journalist in Nashville. And I said, would you help me like with some of this prep for Alan? And he found that newspaper ad, which was Alan had done a lot of showcases and been turned down, but this was the showcase that turned it all around, where Tim Dubois was there. And this was the showcase where he got signed.
That was just a cool thing, though. Really cool.
Wait,
yeah. And then where did you record this? Because was this like his garage? Because I feel like I've seen him do interviews in that scene or in that setting.
Well,
it looked like the coolest room ever.
It was so cool. He had just recently moved. So we were going to do the interview somewhere else on the property, but he had just set up his man cave garage, which has all these beautiful antique cars and boats and cool gear. And he was so, apparently, like, he was really excited to have his setup like all moved in, and he really wanted to do it in there. It was a bit of a, I mean, my team was freaking out a little bit, because what if I just say, I'm making this up, a 10 bay garage, a 13 bay garage.
Yeah.
Does that sound like a good place to do an interview to you?
Well, if it's Alan Jackson's garage, I would say yes. But the sound was not what we wanted it to be. And look, it's an iconic voice.
It was like, you give Alan whatever he wants. And the engineering team was just like, oh no, this is going to be very echoey. Except the thing that was nuts. So Alan, he has so much presence in his voice, but he doesn't speak super loudly. So Alan was not echoing, you know, billowing through the garage, but I was.
It was Kelly Bannon that was echoing.
Because I'm like, well, Alan, what about this? And it's like, woo, woo, woo. And Alan is speaking much more like this. And there was just no tail on the end of his words to go, you know, bounce around the garage.
Are you thinking, because sometimes I'll interview people who are a little more monotone, not that Alan's monotone, but he's chill. He's very chill. And I think that was a great interview, but do you get in your head, like, is this going well? Is this working out? Do you think he's having a good time? Or do you just power through that?
Well, actually, in that case, I felt like it was important to try. I'm obviously like all over the place, but I was trying to match his energy as much as I could. Because he's got amazing energy. It's just here, and it's really like a beautiful lake without any ripples on it. But it's very warm. Like, he was very warm. You know, there are chill people that are cold, but then there are chill people that are warm.
He's kind of like your, like a grandfather, like an old wise one. He's just very chill, very cool. I thought it was a great interview. So, okay, wait. So you've never you've done interviews like on your podcast, but how do you prep? Who preps you for these interviews? Or you just go in and you're
No, I mean, so essentials, I sometimes ask for backup because I just don't, it's especially the catalog with Alan. I mean, it was 21 or 22 albums. I wasn't even like listening to music during some, you know, it's easier when it's like an Eric Church interview. I know that material just because of my story and what I'm into pretty well.
Great interview also. And I still can't believe that Keith Urban gave him like a pre-war Martin dreadnought.
I was like crying. Here's the thing I want to know from you. There are sometimes people, especially like these artists that are that tier, when they're giving you something like that and you're just like, this is gold. Like, this is so good. Like, it's like, don't get distracted. But like, also you're inside, you're just like, yes.
Let me tell you something, because so I started working at a new label, and our head of promo, I was talking about how I have a hard time shaping the brims of my hats. And he sent me this, which is a hat brim shaper. Okay. This is like a $5 toy. Like, this is nothing. And this to me felt like a pre-war Martin. Like, I thought this was like the nicest thing ever, that this dude sent me this little piece of plastic. He got a pre-war Martin. That's unbelievable.
Can we just quick sidebar? If you were to show me how this apparatus works, does it go above or below?
I've got to take my headphones off. You put it like in, and then it comes with a rubber band, and you strap the hat, and there's a couple different, like there's like three.
How do you want it, fratty? Do you want it kind of fratty, or you want it respectable?
It's a great device. Everybody needs one of these. This is a hat shaper. I don't know what this is, but to me, that was like the equivalent of receiving a pre-war Martin. But the Eric Church interview was amazing. I thought Eric had such cool vibes on that interview. He was
honestly, it was crazy. That was one where I was like, I got to keep my shit together. This is a mate. Like, he was just bringing it. That's when it's like, here's the thing that I'm learning, but I'm too neurotic to really have like learned it here in my soul yet. You can do all the prep. You can know too much about the person to
That's
even like be
too.
Cool. But like, they have to bring it. And if they bring it, it doesn't even matter. Like,
that's so true.
Yeah.
Do you prefer sometimes I like interviewing people that I've never met before. Like, we've never met. If I'm too friendly with someone, it's a different vibe. I feel like the interview doesn't go as well. Sometimes it does, but sometimes it doesn't. Like, do you prefer meeting people that you've never met before? Or do you like doing it with your friends who you know super well?
I mean, friends, it is casual and relaxed, and I maybe know where I can go without, you know, we are not trying to, we do want to be newsworthy, right? But my job isn't, I'm not trying to like get something salacious out of someone. So right. Actually the most stressful for me might be like when there is something kind of like, ooh, like out there that's just recently happened about them, but it's, if I was just a straight journalist, like it would be my job to go after that question. But because my job is to give people a place to contextualize their music and their musical story, like that's not always like what's going on with their divorce or like a cheating scandal or like a DUI or something. So that's actually the hardest thing is like, oh, there's a question there. And maybe there's a meaningful musical question that is somewhere in that newsy thing. But knowing how to come at it in a way that's really respectful and still really about the music, not about like the newsy thing, that's actually when I get most stressed.
Because I feel like first and foremost, we are like members of the Nashville community. So I'm always like, because people are always like, can we cut that out? Would you not put? And I'm like, yeah, like I'm here for you first. Like, I want to make sure you're cool, care about that first, and then we'll worry, you know, whatever. Like, I never feel like I'm here to get anyone or whatever. Like, I always want to get the avoid whatever those awkward things are. Mm. Right. It's like, do you prefer interviewing like legends or people who are coming up in their careers?
I mean, it's just so different. I get intimidated by like, even the people that I've met or know, like I get intimidated by artists that I admire. I mean, it doesn't matter if I've shared a stage with them or just admired their music. It's like, I get intimidated in that moment, mostly because I just want to do a really good job. It's more low key with like up and coming people, whether we know each other or not. I'm like, I guess here's maybe what it is. Like, I know the journey for most people to like right before success happens. But once success happens, I don't know how to relate to that. Like, I have like nothing in my story. I'm like, two failed singles at country radio. That's just, if you can, I can take you that far. And then I'm out of my own experiential knowledge.
I don't know. I think that you can empathize though with, I think you can find like not all, cause most reporters have never done what their people have done. I think you're figuring this out. Wait, so you have two shows on Apple Music, and I listen to both of them, but I always get the two titles confused because I'm a little dyslexic. So we have the Kelly Band Show and Today's Country. Today's Country is more long form interview, right? Or do I have this backwards?
That's exactly right. Yeah, okay. It's a meatier interview for sure. There's every week there is a cover star, and that cover star there's a chunk of an interview at least in that show.
And who programs the playlists on the Kelly Band Show? Can we talk about this? Is this like secret sauce?
Yeah, no, I mean, there are a lot of people that I like their taste, and we talk about whether it's like editorial priorities that Apple's really passionate about or radio priorities. But I mean, I have way more freedom than I would have ever, probably ever even asked for. But I do try to program. I mean, I am listening myself. We're trying to do, you know, the show, it needs to feel current. I want it to be hit heavy. And then I also want it to have like a cool factor or introduce people to, you know, things that I think like, I think they will like if I, and especially if it's in the right context or next to the right thing. So yeah, I mean, I don't want to sound gross about it, but I mean, I really get to determine that playlist.
I think you do a great job because I think on the last episode you had like Flatland Cavalry next to like Alan Jackson. Like you do a great job of like putting the hits with stuff that's new and on the rise and maybe you haven't heard about, and then doing like the current hits. Like you've got to put a lot of thought into this, right?
Well, I can't take credit for Flatland Cavalry because Cavalry.
Yes. Is it?
I remember Flatland, even like Cavalry. When I was
now, Cavalry. Now I'm thinking too much about it. Now I don't know. Flatland Cavalry.
I can't take credit for them, but because my friend Madison, who is, she is like editorial for the Countryside of Apple. And we went and saw them live. It was the first show I'd seen in 14 months, a couple weeks ago. And they played that new song and she was already all bought in. And I had heard about them and maybe, but like, I didn't know the music. So that really was like, honestly, a buddy being like, this is cool. And me being like, yeah, that is really cool. That's so fun.
Is that part of the fun part about this gig is like, are you always, well, I guess you were probably always looking for new music, but now you find new music and now you have like an outlet for it. Or now you have a place where you can tell others about it, right?
The thing that I'm aware of more than anything now is how little I was listening to other people's music. When my entire world was making my own music, like you're driving home from a write, somebody's just sent you the demo from yesterday, or you're like listening to the work tape because you're about to go sing the demo. Like I was always listening to my own music, and now I'm listening so much to other people's music. That's been, I mean, I always was a music lover. I was always listening to stuff and trying to figure out, you know, what's next and what's, you know, happening, but. Not like this. It's very different. It's cool. I mean, it's fun.
Do people reach out to you and say like, hey, I love that song, or like, thanks. Like I discovered the song on your show and like, thanks for like, that's gotta be so cool. Right.
That actually is the most meaningful thing because I remember, I don't remember where I was, but there were multiple times. I'm going to give you two scenarios. So when I was on radio tour.
Yes.
I remember hearing, like, let's say I'm in the car with like one of my regionals and we were making radio visits and we're listening to this station. We're going to go visit or we've just visited and they play my single. And they're like, this is a brand new song from someone named Kelly Bannon. Do you like it? And then one time I was here in Nashville and WSIX was playing a song that we weren't even singling, like the label wasn't singling, but we sort of put it out as a digital single. And this was kind of before that was as common as it is now. This is like, let's say this is 2013, 14. And it was called Smoke When I Drink. And I heard it. I was like, oh my gosh, they're playing Smoke When I Drink. This is so cool. And the woman who back announced it said, or maybe she introed it. She might have introed it this way. She was like, this is a new artist. Her name is Kelly Bannon. This song is Miranda Lambert has a baby with Eric Church. And I was just like, yes, like maybe someone doesn't like it, but at least she used her 15 seconds of real estate to paint a picture, add some context. To me, I've never understood I'm spending my very valuable 3 minutes of radio real estate on this song, but I'm not even going to commit to it enough to tell you I like it and that's why I'm playing it.
Right.
I've never understood that. And so I think to go all the way back to what you asked, the most meaningful thing that I can do on a daily basis is give someone 15 seconds, 10 seconds, 5 seconds of a reason to pay attention to a new artist and give them a second look, which I wish people had given me.
That makes all the difference though. And that's part of why I love these Apple radio stations is because you really feel like you're listening to something programmed. It's fun to have someone kind of take you along for the journey. And then like with a new artist, like you'd had Carter Faith on recently, and then you were able to tell her story and then going to the song. And when you hear her talk about that song or talk about why she covered Britney Spears, it makes the listening experience so much more fun, right? Or you can
you are so well researched.
I hired an entire team, 10 people to right?
You are very well researched.
It makes a big difference though.
Yeah, it does. And that one was fun. I mean, I think one, that's fun because I'm like, I'm a fan of Carter. We're not buddies. I mean, I'd like to be buddies. I think she's rad. Her voice is so cool. And that was just fun because it was like, oh, I want to talk to you in this early stage of where you are and people are just meeting you and falling in love with your voice. And what a cool, like, unvarnished place to be in the arc of an artist's career.
It's a lot of pressure to be like a real tastemaker here. Like people really listen to what you're doing. This is
I don't know that that's true. That's so complimentary. You're flattering me, but I think it's cool to be able to be in the mix, talking about music that we care about.
Absolutely. Okay. So I want to go back for a second. So you started out with this amazing artist career and you had signed to Capitol early on. And what's the story here that I've heard where you got signed because you were like found doing something that was like 90 gigs in 90 mm-hmm. days or something? Like what?
Again,
is this
there a better researched person out there?
No, there's lots of them. So what's the story here though? Because this is like like you were doing this thing, right? And someone found you off this, right?
So, okay, here's the story. So, I lost two siblings to addiction. One older, one younger. My younger brother, Grant, he passed away in 2008. And out of that time, I was just honestly trying to figure out, like, how do I mark this anniversary? Like, he passed in February of 2008. And let's say it's, like, November of 2008. And I was just starting to look at the calendar the next year and felt, like, the first year after anything traumatic or any significant loss is just full of landmines, little landmines in right. all over the calendar.
Everything is like another reminder of the thing that was that thing of that year. It's yes.
Yeah. Whether it's anniversaries, the first with the first, you know, all the first without. So somewhere that, you know, end of that year, November, early December, I was like, what if I did some sort of like a tour or play, you know? And then it just hit me, like when people are entering recovery, they go to 90 meetings. That's sort of the first chunk of recovery because it's just so tenuous early on. They go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And so I was like, what if I could play 90 shows in 90 days in those first 3 months of the year, and it would cover the anniversary. And so I think it was like, you know, let's say it was January 1st to April 1st or whatever it was. And so out of that, so oddly, so that happened. And I mean, I played a Hooters.
Who books the shows? Are you booking all the shows?
I had no team.
This is Kelly Bannon going out and booking the Hooters.
Oh, it was so terrible. So I played Hooters. I played the Davidson County Drug Court, which is like people in their jumps. It's like jail.
Yeah.
I played, a bunch of random little places. I think the last show was at Exit Inn, the final show.
Oh, that's
show
a great
Exit
show,
Inn.
Actually. That's a big show.
And
hometown show.
Opening for Bo Bice. How about that throwback?
No way. Oh my God. That was the final show you said?
Uh-huh.
At Exit
and actually,
Inn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Someone else might have been on the lineup that night. I can't remember. So all that to say, then the Tennessean kind of like heard about my story and they did this, let's say it was like an Easter special on redemptive stories. And they put me on the front page of the paper.
No way.
And Paul Worley,
legendary producer,
saw it. And then a friend who was kind of trying to help me, one of my friend's dads who was in the industry was trying to kind of help me guide me. And he made the intro and, you know, Paul was also in recovery. I think it maybe that part of the story connected to him. So I just went into his little office and played him some songs on my guitar. And he literally, Paul Worley, he was like, oh my gosh, Zach too. By the way, back then, like I didn't even know, I probably wasn't wearing mascara. Like I didn't even know. I mean, you have to, like, when you commit to doing this, I don't want to say this, you have to, but the bulk of women in this industry, you like have to learn how to be your own glam squad. You can't roll up like the dudes roll up to it's like, you really have to get, it's really been a painful experience getting good at doing your own makeup. But I roll into this meeting with Paul Worley and I play him a couple songs. And he just was so sincere. And he is still just such a meaningful part of my story. But he said, okay, we're going to make a project together and you need to go write the songs. And we just, they started helping me with setting up some co-writes. And I was writing with the people I was already writing with. I had a couple little, you know, co-writes. I was very off the grid. And so I think it was really, and I wouldn't recommend this. I think there are other ways that you could go about it now, but you know, rolling into, I mean, we did kind of those round robins of label pitches where you right. go in to the conference room.
Wait, what would you not recommend? Is this what you wouldn't recommend?
Here's what I wouldn't recommend. Like, I think at the time, I did not realize how important it is to be a part of the fabric of Music Row. And that really, and really what I mean is like publishers. So you want, like at that time, I was really arrogant and naive. And I was like, I want to own my own publishing. And like, I'm doing this myself. Like, but like, you really need partners, because if you're going to be on country radio, it is already such an outside chance that, and it's even more outside that you're like this monolith over here by you need to be deeply embedded into the music making machine of Nashville. And I mean that actually with reverence. And I think that means you need publisher buy-in. But when I got signed, I mean, I'm sure people were like, who is this? We've literally never heard her name before. I had a major label deal.
Do you need buy-in to get the best songs because the publisher is going to help with the radio single? Why do you need that buy-in?
Okay. I think you need buy-in because the most valuable currency for any career is the songs.
Right.
And whether you're writing them or you are cutting outside songs, those relationships. So it was sort of like major label deal. Now we got to backtrack and build a relationship with hit songwriters. And so I was kind of, you know, doing this little thing over here and it was cool. And I think it had value, but I think, you know, I just really, at this point of my career, I would say, I think it is the publishers that make the world go round because of how valuable the songs are. And then also having a publisher that's like helping guide and shape you in the, or just a sounding board, you know, as you're growing as a writer, I think that sounding board is so important.
Yeah. You kind of were like you went the equivalent of like analog TikTok viral with your 90. I mean, this was such a cool thing. And then I feel like there are all these kids today who are like blowing up on TikTok and then they're getting signed so quickly before they even have maybe moved to Nashville and they have no team members.
Or ever played a show.
Many of them have never played a show. So true. But like, do you have any advice for these people who are like early on, like they did something viral, it blew up, they got signed. I mean, it's a tough position to be in, right?
I think the other, I've probably like said this before, but this is my other, I don't think when you're on the front end of that stuff and you've got all these fancy people that are like signing you and telling you all the things that, you know, you have a lot more power than you think because you still have mystique or you still have, you don't have any strikes against you. You have no failures. So instead, like you overcoming the couple first missteps is really hard. And so I think what I would say is like, however you get in the room, like then use that moment to pile up that song catalog and pile up the currency that's going to get you to the next thing, whatever that is.
that's always what it comes down to. Like, I always, like, people always talk about like American Idol successes, and then they point to someone like Gabby Barrett. I'm always like, Gabby Barrett had two of the most incredible songs that she led with, that she's leading with right now. It always comes down to that. That's what makes or breaks everything.
This is, I respect Gabby so much. I think she is one of the finest vocalists maybe to ever be on American Idol. If I Hope had not happened that way at that time, we wouldn't be talking about her.
Right, 100%. She needed that.
She needed that great of a song.
Which she wrote.
And like, yeah, I mean, some of that you can't even orchestrate, but you know, you can't, but yeah, I think that's it. It's like the fame, the TikTok viralness, any of it from American, like that kind of visibility is just like the jet fuel that starts it, but it has to intersect with legitimate hits, or it's gone in a year and a half, 2 years,
right?
I think.
When you performed on the Today Show, which I think was last year, right? Was this last
2019.
Okay, so we'll say last year.
It was last year.
It was a quarantine last year. When you perform on the Today Show, because I'm always curious about this, how do you, like, are you rehearsing for days with that band on that one song? Or, like, they say, like, the joke is, like, you rehearse a week, you show up and play for 10 people and you make $20, or you play for 10,000 people and you rehearse for, like, one day. Like, there's a joke. Like, what, you know.
I haven't heard that joke. That's so true. On that, what's true about that story? One, I sold my pickup truck to afford that.
Are you serious? And was this your only pickup truck?
It was a wonderful 1948 red Chevy pickup truck that is now on a Christmas tree farm somewhere in upstate New York.
No way.
Because being an independent artist is expensive.
Yeah.
You don't realize, like, it's not like you pay to get on the Today Show, but they bill back the record label a production cost.
Right.
And if you don't have a record label,
you're the record label.
Yeah. Yeah.
So wait, I want to hear this.
So there was that. And I mean, don't hear it as like a slight to them, but it was like, you want to get on the Today Show. And when my publicist called, it was like, well, shit, now how are you going to afford it? You know, like, she's worked so hard to get this opportunity.
What's expensive? But the band members, flying everyone there.
Well, that's any show, that's, you know, whether show. You're bus, you know, van or flights. So that's a cost, but that's, you're going to incur that cost anywhere. It's more like there's sort of, I'm sure it's legitimate, but there is, you know, a production cost that they are fronting, that we don't have any control over, that is what gets billed back to you. So yes, and then also flights, and of course paying my guys their rate and paying for rehearsals and, you know, per diem and things like that. But that band, we knew each other well. We've played a lot together. We had just come off a couple other shows. So it was like the song was super familiar. Of course, we had a handful of rehearsals specifically for that, because we were using a vocal producer who, there's just a lot of things about live TV that you can help set yourself up to be great.
Right.
And so we worked through some of that so that vocal producer like knew, so he could mix it live. Essentially, he knew where the moves were. So he was really familiar with that song and the record. But I, to be honest, that was maybe not the song I would have chosen, but it was the song that the Today Show chose. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's hard. That's a hard song for me to sing. So I worked with there's a vocal coach here who is incredible. Her name's Kendra. And I worked with her specifically on a handful of notes that I didn't feel as confident about. It's one thing to do it in the room, and yes, they continue, but when no one's watching, you can hit all kinds of things. It's when the pressure's on that things just get crazy. And you're playing at like 4:30 in the morning.
Oh my God, yes.
So we spent probably, the moment I found out that was happening, we met twice a week to work on the vocals for that song. So it was probably 4 to 6 weeks worth of vocal work.
But does someone tell, like, I've heard, like, one of the things is that you have to, you're supposed to play to the cameras, and it's tough because you play to the room, but you're supposed to play to the cameras, right? Did anyone tell you this?
I mean, so that's where, like, I actually probably needed even more experts than I had. That was literally the first time I'd ever, other than like a music video or like,
I thought it was a great performance. Taping.
I mean, actually I've roasted Bruce Kalmick. It wasn't like the immediate feedback, but like, he was definitely like, oh, okay, well, there's some weird stuff with some of your like camera work, but we want to have room to grow.
Room to grow. I actually thought it was a great performance. I thought the band sound killer, really well rehearsed. Everyone, because sometimes you see those performances, and to me, they sound a little sloppy sometimes. But yours was really good, actually. Not actually, thanks. It was really good.
You want to know actually the most fun thing about that?
Yeah.
Was one. So I have a group of girlfriends that have come into my life. Like, I just turned 40, so I'm no spring chicken. On February 18th, I'm the oldest woman in country music. And
that is not true. That couldn't be further from
Dolly. That. Dolly has me beat, but only by a little. And
I could name five who are, that is just ridiculous.
But my crew of girls are like, they love me aggressively. And as soon as we found out that I was playing the Today Show, they all booked flights. So you're right. There was no one in Studio A, but all of my best girlfriends
were
right there, losing their minds. They're crying. Like, they know how to, like, I'm not always like, I get embarrassed or I don't always know how to stop in the moment and take in the moment, but they are, this crew is like the queens of, oh, we're celebrating this. I mean, they go so hard on the celebration front. So they were just like, I mean, it was amazing. They were crying. Like, I finish and they're sobbing. It was so great.
And then what do you do after? Because at this point it's like 4:35 in the morning. You've got to pack up. Do you crash? Do you get breakfast in Times Square? Like, what do you do after?
So I think by the time we'd actually loaded out, it had been a minute. I maybe had one other, we had maybe one other morning press thing, like a little interview we knocked out. Then we all went to like an early lunch. And here is the, like, this is going to make me sound way fancier than I am, so don't be fooled, but I love like vintage and estate jewelry.
Yeah.
And so there is this company that I like follow their Instagram that has, and of course New York has like all the best fanciest jewelry.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, hey, like, I definitely can't buy anything from you, but I'm going to be in town for a couple of days. Like, could I come look at some of your estate, your vintage jewelry? So me and my girl gang roll up to like look at diamonds that we cannot afford and just like try on some stuff and have, so we did that and then we went to lunch.
That's the, and and we started this podcast talking about throwing out, you know, one time use designer clothing. So that's not even the fanciest thing that we've heard on this podcast. Yeah. What do we have, any new music coming out or what is happening? Is there anything we can talk about or should talk about? Like, what's happening?
Realistically, I'm writing, I would like to make a new record. I'd like to start that record the fall, end of the year. But I have to write the songs.
We have to write the song. What does Bruce say? Is Bruce like, come on, we need more music? Or
Bruce has been a mate. I mean, here was the thing. I at first was apprehensive. I was really in my head about what would it mean to move into this role with Apple. One, I had never had healthcare. Like, I really hadn't had healthcare in like 5 years. Since I left my label deal, I hadn't had healthcare. And so it was so, so appealing. Like, oh my gosh, like I could actually get paid. This is shocking. This is truly shocking. And have healthcare, I'm blown away. I hope I don't sound just like I'm blowing smoke, but I love the people that I get to work with. They're the people that lured me in are so amazing. And, but I was really in my head about like, what would people think? You know how you think everybody's paying attention to you and no one gives a shit.
They do care, but they don't care.
They don't. But I was super in my head about what would people think? Would people think, oh, like she's finally giving up? So I had to kind of like stew and be over dramatic about that for about a month after we first started talking about this role, the full-time role. We had launched Today's Country, but I didn't know all the plans that Apple really had for the station, for Apple Music Country, or that they were looking essentially for an anchor and to build out from there. And so, but Bruce said, and I think this was really wise advice. He was like, look, you've worked for yourself since you graduated from college.
Yeah.
And it's going to take you a second to just get your bearings and figure out how to work for a corporation. So take your first year and just do that. And if you write, write, but don't put a ton of pressure on yourself. Just like get your bearings. There's all the time in the world. Like that's actually a very cool perspective from a manager. Like, I thought that was really, and so we hit that year mark and we just started kind of bulking up my calendar a little bit more writing. And I don't know, I'm just kind of trusting that. The coolest thing that I will say is I have tried to force a lot of things in my life and it just never works, right?
Yeah.
The tighter I'm holding onto it, I don't know if you've experienced this, Zach.
Do you feel like I'm a guitar player and I feel like when you do like a great interview, you have a great conversation, it's almost like playing like a great like jazz solo or something. Like, do you feel this way? Like, do you get your artistic itch scratched by doing these interviews and talking to these people?
Yes, absolutely. So there's that part where I'm actually like feel very satisfied. Like I feel challenged, inspired, and like really that part of it is so fun. I mean, getting to hear Eric Church talk about how they made Heart and Soul.
So cool.
I left honestly just like feeling like, how do I even, like, can I be that creative? How can I approach my art with that kind of reverence and commitment and ingenuity? So not every conversation is that conversation, but for the most part, it is a lot of satisfying conversations about music. People are cool. They want, and like talking about music is fun, but yeah. So that was a long way to say, I would like to make a project this year or start a project this year. But I got to write the songs.
Will there be any piano on this project?
Because yes.
Didn't you buy a piano
yes.
in quarantine? And start, yes. like, so are you still working on this? Are you still trying to learn piano?
Okay, so I am both the oldest woman in country music and the shittiest guitar player. And I was a trifecta. And the shittiest piano player. Like, I am the most novice piano player.
Really?
But I just felt like whatever I do next, I was like, I think it's going to happen on the piano. And it was just, like, fun to start. I mean, This is my best buddy right here.
What is that? Because I've seen that in all your videos. What is that guitar?
That is a 48 LG2 Gibson.
Classic. Incredible.
That guitar I got during 90 gigs in 90 days.
So this guitar has been with you through everything.
He really has.
I get this. I've got a guitar that's similar that I've been playing since.
Who's that?
I've got a Fender Telly. Here, I'll grab it. It's literally right here. This is a Fender Custom Shop 67 Telly. And I've played this thing through high school gigs, through my music performance degree that I got at college. I've done everything with this guitar.
It's, you know, there's something about like, I mean, there's the like, you can't make old friends.
You can't
make old relationships with instruments either. And it's, I mean,
I relate with you. So I bought a pedal steel a couple of years ago, which is right behind me. And I wanted to learn how to play pedal steel. But I think like when I play guitar, there's a lot of pressure of like, I'm playing guitar since I was a little kid. I should be better. Like I'm too in my head about it. But playing pedal steel is so artistically freeing to me because there's no, I'm supposed to suck. There's no That's pressure. Right. Do you kind of feel this playing piano? Yes. Like, is it just no stress? Like, I'm supposed to be bad because I've only been playing for like a year. I can suck on it.
Yes, yes, exactly that. And it's fun and it's still all these things that you can discover. I mean, just the way that like different guitars or different tunings, like you're going to hear different things. And we get in our ruts and we have our things that we go to. But I think the thing, my hang up is I don't want to perform. Like, I feel so embarrassed of like the quality of my playing. Like, I'm not trying to like go perform in front of anyone. Except I do have visions of like Christmas carols being sung around the piano, like the next time we can actually have like a Christmas party. Like I want that, but I'm not trying to like, I don't want to play this piano. Like I'm not even trying, I don't want to be playing it. I just want to write on it and be able to find new melodies and things. And yeah, it's so fun.
It's so fun, right? To learn a new instrument. Kelly, what have we left out here? We've really covered a lot here. What's been unsaid?
You're masterful.
No, I don't know about that, but what's been unsaid here? We've learned a lot. I think we've learned that you really need the songs. If you're going to, you need the songs. We've learned that sometimes you need to have others help you. Like you need to bring someone in to prep for an interview. You need your friends there when you're playing live on the Today Show.
You do.
To rely on others sometimes. It's okay. What else?
Are you just rattling that off? Did you take notes?
No.
What else can you teach me?
This is it. What has anyone given you any good interview tricks? Because I always like interview tricks. Like, have you thought about it? Here's a trick I learned. So I listen. Do you listen to a lot of interviews and go like, how are you such a good interview? Like I listen to interviews all the time. Like I'm obsessed with listening to interviews, and I listen to a lot of Stern, like everyone does. But Stern gave me this trick, which I think is really interesting, which is if you come to the end of an interview and you say like, well, that was great, we're done. Like that's the end of the interview. And then you keep going, like he always wraps up and then he goes for another 30 minutes. And what he says is like the guest loosens up if they think the interview's over. And then he gets another version of the guest past that point. Does that make any sense? That was great. Thanks for coming on, Kelly. We're wrapping up. And then he'll like throw in another question, kind of like I'm doing right now. And then like the guest like loosens up because they think the interview's over.
Yeah.
And then they get much more real. That's a Stern trick. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
I have been reading kind of and rereading his latest book.
Yeah. Howard Stern Comes Again or which one?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't have a lot of those signatures that he has or haven't figured them out for myself yet. The ability to ask the question without shame, that is the question that everyone wants to know, and approach it in a way that still, even if it feels a little, it still sort of feels cool because he's earnest.
Yeah.
I also think he does a really good job of just sort of quickly, like there's always like a, wow, you are a sight for sore eyes, Zach, that hat. Like he always does like the,
yeah.
You look fat here, you know. Actually, I've been reading this book. There's a Priya Parker. There's this researcher. Her name is Priya Parker. And she has a book called The Art of Gathering.
The Art of Gathering.
Yes. And I've been thinking about how I can hold space in my interviews like they are. Her rules for gathering are very specific. And so I've been kind of thinking, I would love to think through both for my shows, but also for an interview, like, I am the host of this party. This is a gathering. And how do I make it that?
Yeah. Interesting. Have you ever read Tribes by Seth Godin?
No.
I think would talk about this, but he talks about how to lead a tribe and the importance of forming a tribe. I don't know if that relates to what you're saying, but I've never thought about it that way, but I think that's an interesting perspective.
That's cool.
I like this.
Tribes.
Okay. Tell me your book again.
The Art of Gathering.
The Art of Gathering. Okay. Mm-hmm. I've got a little bit of homework.
It's probably a little bit of a stretch, but it made me realize that there are many kinds of gatherings.
Yeah.
And what happens if we take ownership over them as such?
Pro tips here.
I don't know.
I'm in
the experimental phase.
Have you ever done The Artist's Way, by the way, Julia Cameron?
Yeah.
I feel like
it's been a long time.
I just feel like that's your vibe. I feel like you would have done this. Like I'm very into this. I just did it maybe like 6 months ago. And now I'm like once you do it, you start hearing everyone talk about it kind of, right?
So I get really hung up in the morning pages.
Me too. We're going overtime now, but we'll end with the morning pages, but what's your thing with, do you do these religiously or what's your take?
No, I just, one, I dread them. And then I judge them.
Can't judge them. That's the whole point of the morning. You can't judge them.
Judge them.
That's what the whole point of the morning pages.
So
I go into phases, but then whenever I do them, I always go, I can't stop doing these because they're so helpful. I get so many good ideas. I feel like I'm so much more motivated. It's so weird that these things work, but now I'm like not doing them, but I'm trying to get back into them. It's tricky.
I'm like, damn it. This is like the wink that's telling me I need to like go back to my morning pages.
Let's start doing the morning pages. Okay. We'll subliminally do
it's
them.
Your fault.
We'll do them. Kelly, this has been so much fun.
You were amazing, Zach. Thank you so much.
Great guest. Because you know what it's like when you kind of have a lame guest. Like great guest. So much fun.
Here's what I want to go out on.
Okay, yeah.
What is the highest number of yawns you've ever gotten out of a guest?
Okay, so I don't think I've ever had a guest yawn. But I have had guests like check their computers and their phones, or like kind of like do other things, or like pet their dog and be like way more into the dog than the conversation. And all that stuff is heartbreaking to me. Cause I put a lot of time into like that, right? Like does that, and then it kind of throws you off and it's hard to get back into it. It's hard, right? Like how many have you had? Have you had yawns?
I have a record number of yawns.
Seven yawns. Were you ticking?
Famous. No, I just know because we had to video edit around the yawns.
That's bad. That's bad. Don't yawn if you're on.
But I mean, in theory, that probably was my fault. I don't know. Was that my fault? I don't know.
I get very in my head. I get very in my head about this. And then I get very starstruck. I get more starstruck when I interview like big CEOs. Like I interviewed the CEO of $1 billion company on my podcast and I got so starstruck. And he was so not having it. And I just lost my train of thought. I was like, I couldn't come up with questions. I was like stumbling. It was the only like interview that I can point to. I was like, I couldn't air it. It was so bad. I actually did air it. And I edited around it. But it was like, it was so rough. And it messes with you. It trips you out when the other person on the other end's not engaged. It's rough. Anyway.
It is. It's like a co-write.
It's like, I've never been in a co-write, but I would imagine it's like a co-write.
Sometimes it's bad. It's just boring or it's bad. There's no chemistry or you're in a bad mood or they're in a bad mood. But
yeah, 100%. Yeah. Where do you get your hats from?
This one is from H. Audrey, which is Holly Williams' store.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks. Again, just covering up the dirty hair, but.
Fantastic. Kelly, this has been so much fun. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you. And, it was so fun.
Hope to see you around Nashville. Now that the world's opening up, we'll see you around.
I'd love that.
Stay well. Talk to you soon.
See ya.
There you have it. Kelly Bannon on episode 67. You know, I think we really got to know Kelly here. And I'm a fan. I'm a big fan of her and these Apple shows. You have to give these a listen. They're all really good. And I listen to Kelly's every week, honestly, if not every other week, but I'm listening to her show constantly because she's really got her finger on the pulse on new music that's coming out in Nashville and also turns you on to a lot of classic stuff as well that maybe you don't know or you're going to enjoy reminiscing with. You know, I like to reminisce with people I don't know, which is a joke by Stephen Wright. Take it, leave it, I don't care. The Zach Kuhn Show is mixed by Sam Heyman and our theme music is by Justin Johnson. If you want more content from us, you can subscribe to our newsletter at nashvillebriefing.com or you can follow us on socials, everything at Nashville Briefing. By the way, let me tell you a couple other things while I have you. The Zach Kuhn Show is brought to you by ZipRecruiter, which is really the fastest way to find people for your business. So check out ZipRecruiter, first of all. And second of all, the Zach Kuhn Show is part of the American Songwriter Podcast Network. And we're proud to be part of this network. They do so much for us here at the show. We could not get this up and running without them every week. And we're grateful for them. We're very grateful for American Songwriter and the Podcast Network. So check it out. Check out some of the other shows in the network because they've got some great music podcasts. And I think if you just give it a try. Check them out. You might be glad you did, okay? And don't complain to me if you're not. I mean, I get. But check them out. I think you'll be glad. That's it. This is going on 2 minutes. I gotta get after it. I got things to do. Goodbye.